This is Open Run.
Not bad.
Nailed it. Love it.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Open Run is this is number two for the year of our Lord 2018. We are doing it live in LA in studio, not only with me and Stefan in the same building, a very rare occurrence, but we also have an incredible live guest here in person, just walked in. It's himself, not a hologram. We have 007, No Chill Gil, Gilbert Arenas, three-time All-Star, assassin in the building with us. Thank you so much for being here, bro.
Oh, man, thank you for having me.
Of course. Coming fresh off of your show this morning, right? You came right over.
I shot early this morning and, you know, slept in the car a couple hours and, bam, here I am.
Very common for L.A. Don't be alarmed. This is something we do out here. It's a West Coast thing. We get some Z's in our vehicle sometimes.
The best shows happen after the guest takes a cat nap.
Yeah,
I found that.
Rested. We said.
Well,
I
mean, rested.
Then you're rider. We told you, come rested.
Yeah,
you
know, well,
find
well
a
rested.
Parking lot, a Staples parking lot, Office Max, something like that. You just came from hosting your show Out of Bounds on Complex. We want to make sure to plug that.
Yes, and then I was going to say right when, we did this off air, but I actually wanted to stretch it out a little, which is the first thing I asked Gilbert, when he walked in, was, what should I call you? And obviously he said Gilbert. But in my mind, I was like, well, I was thinking Gilbert or Gil, but then something on our show, we obsess a lot about nicknames and kind of the bygone era of good nicknames and wanting it to come back. And like, you had a series of good ones.
Yeah.
And so I wouldn't mind opening the show with asking you, which was your favorite nickname for yourself? And then also, which was your favorite basketball player nickname?
Okay, my only nickname was Agent Zero.
That's the only real one.
That was the only real one. Hibachi was just something I said when I was busting somebody's ass.
Right. Well,
Hibachi, yeah, that's okay.
You're a commentator, no intention for you to be called Hibachi.
Yeah, right. And then it just came. He's the Hibachi.
He's
heating up.
Wait, why did you say
yeah,
Hibachi?
Yeah, where did that come from?
Because okay,
you went to Benihana the night before a game.
No, just NBA. Okay, so it started with Brendan Haywood. Me and Larry Hughes, the year before, was getting torched sometimes by guards. He's like, man, they out there giving y'all that hibachi service, right? Just cooking chicken and shrimp, right? So the following season, I just said, no, I'm hibachiing people.
Right.
And
right.
NBA players, for some reason, they hate when you talk shit when you're scoring.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like one of those rules where it just irritates the hell out of them. So if you just make any sound, like raindrops, anything right. while you're scoring, it just irritates the defender. So that was just my thing.
Which you love. You do that as a weakness.
Yeah, that
you
was
know
a, yeah.
how to get into their head.
Yeah.
And you say NBA players as opposed to it's more acceptable playing street ball, right? Playing in the neighborhood, playing in college.
Like, yeah, like, you know, changes? Like when you're in on the streets and college,
yeah.
you know, talking trash is part of it.
Yeah.
You know, there's always that one guy that, but when it just becomes something just so random that doesn't make sense, it gets irritating. Like, we had a teammate who used to just say raindrops. So every time he shot it, raindrops, and you can just see defenders just get irritated and over about it.
Will that teammate remain nameless? Or
Deshaun Stevenson. He used to just say raindrops, and then when he hit, like, three in a row, it's, I can't feel my face.
Are both of these predate two songs? Raindrops was before Migos.
Oh, yes.
Raindrops dropped out.
For real?
And I Can't Feel My Face was before The Weeknd song?
Yes, I Can't Feel My Face. And he'll start doing this with his hands. Yeah.
Wow. So music artists, rap artists have been ripping off Deshaun Stevenson
for years.
Wow. Ghostwriter.
Wait, did you have any go-tos other than Hibachi?
No, that was it. We had so many
You didn't
players.
Need more. That was more
yeah,
than enough.
We had so many players with antics on our team that it was just... It wasn't enough for all of us.
There's real value to getting in people's heads. Yeah. Like, it makes you can tell, you could feel it kind of, them flinch.
It's competitive sports, so it's like trash talking is part of it. You know, getting the edge that night over somebody is what it's all about.
Well, hang on. This perfectly segues into the first thing we have to discuss today.
Let's do it.
The first things first, as we might call it.
Yeah, that's our segment.
Everybody's talking about it. Last night, the Rockets-Clippers game.
Uh-huh.
There's a lot of trash talk. In fact, a young man in dress clothes who wasn't even in the game seemed to maybe get in the head of the Rockets and cause them to storm the Clippers locker room after.
Yes.
I don't know, everybody, if you didn't see the game last night, things got real chippy when Chris Paul returned to his former home court to play the Clippers. And toward the end of the game, Blake and Chris were getting physical with each other. It looked like nothing crazy, but some extracurricular elbows and stuff. And then there was a play where Blake appeared to maybe graze D'Antoni, and there was a foul call that they argued about, and then Blake and D'Antoni are drawing at each other. Chris Paul chimes in. At a certain point, Ariza is standing by the Clippers bench, and Austin Rivers starts chirping, and I don't know what he said. I want to know if you know.
It was the funniest. I don't know what he said either. And
but
I was like,
got
what?
Him all riled up.
Yes. You know, it's one of those things where Chris Paul came from here. So, you know, practice with, you know, he has that competitive attitude where it's just, it's that me. It's like he's just a killer, no matter if it's in practice, mm-hmm. you know, in a game, he's just a fierce competitor. So I'm pretty sure he bumped heads with Austin. I'm pretty sure he bumped heads with Blake also.
Yeah.
True. So once
he
left
Austin for years in practice. Yeah. Yeah.
So once he left, there's a known rule. If you get traded, when you come back,
you got dumped and you're seeing your ex out there flossing with the swaggy ass team, feeling himself, and you haven't found a new partner yet. So it's kind of
but
like,
that's the funny part is like Chris Paul, you have the advantage because you chose Houston.
Yeah.
So coming back here, it seemed like it was a road game for the Clippers,
right?
Because they were attacking everybody.
I was
like, what the hell is this? I seen Blake shorts get ripped. I seen everybody throwing shots at Blake. I was like, what kind of home game is this for
you,
Blake?
It was that home aggression.
It was the, like, adventure confident. Athletic leggings that got ripped, which Reggie Miller called tights, which I feel like finally someone called them tights.
But,
like,
but I've never seen a home player
get
abused
I know.
By the opposing team. So when I heard Chris Paul and them went into the locker room, because I didn't see the game last night, I was like, oh, they must have been in Houston. And it's like, no, they were in L.A. I was like,
that's so aggressive.
What the?
So did you already unpack the whole hilarious, you might have already gone through this morning, but there was this whole hilarious scenario where the first rumor comes out from Woj, captain of rumors, right? Uh-huh. And the idea is that James Harden, Trevor Ariza, and Gerald Green storm the locker room. Uh-huh. So already it's this crazy, like, I don't know, Pirates of the Caribbean scenario. And then you got Chris Paul apparently taking like a secret tunnel that he knows about because he used to play there, go over there with an unnamed group of players, and then Clint Capella's knocking on the front door. Storming the beaches. I don't know what's going on there.
The sad part is we don't fight. There's no fighting.
Nobody's
man.
Really
This
no.
is what I want to ask
so what
you about.
You,
the
what
actual
are you about
perspective.
To go do? Like,
just because, you know, it's an ego sport.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like, it's one of those things, if you back down, you look bad in front of your peers.
Right, right.
Now they don't respect you. Now they probably won't pass you the ball. Little shit So you got to show that you're still tough guy. So that's all that is, just showing that you.
Even though we know it ain't, you know, you're just going to jaw jack.
Yeah, you're just going to jaw jack.
Either 2 inches away or 2 feet away.
Yeah, you're going to pull me back. You know, it's all that. Like, the closest you'll get to a fight is always the initial when they throw the first little swing that they're
and
not going to hit
gets
you.
Broken up.
Yeah, and then it's the breakup.
What about the occasional thing where you're like, oh, I heard they got into it by the team buses? That's always the thing.
It's
the buses.
It's same
thing?
Same thing.
Well, but remember a couple nights ago, Kyle Lowry and Ben Simmons.
Yesterday, too.
Ryan's like, let's go all back. Lowry's like, let's go.
Sprint it.
And then they sprint around and try to pretend they're going to meet in the middle, but there's always guards.
So you think once they're off camera, they start walking real slow?
No. They really run.
The enthusiasm is there.
Yeah, they really run to the middle because you got to remember the crowd seeing it, their teammates seeing it. So they got to run off.
If a tree falls in the woods and nobody sees it doesn't really
you got to pretend you really, they stopped me. I was about to bash them. You know,
hold me back. Right.
So another thing, I mean, since we're like children of the 90s, there's always comparing the modern game to the 90s game. There's always this talk also by commentators about how, like, today is softer. It was so rough back then. And
this romantization of, like, Oakley and Barkley and, you know, Rodman. Yeah. Everybody was so rough and tumble. See, Lambeer,
and your experience is basically your experience kind of bookends those, is bookended by those areas.
Yeah, you got to remember.
You got a dose of both.
We all grow up playing 90s basketball. Mm. When you're playing at the park, it's always prison rules.
Those are the heroes.
You know, you're always playing prison rules. There's no foul, no blood, no foul. We all grew up doing that.
Yeah.
But to say that these players are weaker, No, they're not weaker. They're actually stronger than, you know, with evolution, everyone becomes bigger.
Right.
You know, so to say, oh, LeBron James wouldn't last a minute in our league. Yeah, he would. He's 6'10".
He's gigantic. Yeah.
6'10", 255.
But is that more about the sensitivity and, like, the flopping? Right? No, is that more about, like, the way we take a beating versus...
No, it's the way the rules are. They're adapting to the rules. Mm-hmm. You know, it's the NBA realized... We don't want no Charles Oakleys. We don't want these guys in our league because these guys are less talented, but they're hurting
people.
They're hurting the stars that people are coming to see.
Right. Yeah.
So we need to try to weave them out of this league, and those players turned into Dirk Nowitzkis.
Mm.
So that power forward turned into the stretch forward.
A finesse position.
Yeah, it became a power forward. And then so you don't really have your enforcer anymore.
Right.
Now you just have more skilled players.
Who do we have left that's kind of reminiscent of that era? I could think of like Boogie.
Boogie is a skilled player. You would think somebody.
But that'll give you an elbow in the paint.
He just likes physical. Like you would say somebody like a Draymond Green.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
You know, is. But I wouldn't
you
say
know,
he's
the
last.
He's also super skilled.
But he's a super skilled player.
He's like a total package.
Yeah, but when you find one guy who plays a little aggressive, you're like, oh, look, yeah, he plays tough.
Because we're yearning for that.
Yeah, it's just the way the rules are.
Yeah.
But there was no one that was going to stop Russell Westbrook.
Right.
You know, LeBron. No one's stopping him.
To get on the court now,
league.
You have to have all the tools. You can't be just a one-way player.
Just a one-way brute player that just, it doesn't, nobody wants it anymore.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, when you see the state of the league now, is this something where you're like, oh, I'd be yelling hibachi three times as often if
I were
in the league now?
I mean, because it's what we call small ball, us and Phoenix.
Yeah.
That's everyone now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, everyone is just, psh, 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 psh,
right.
You know,
fast,
chucking.
Small,
it's like shooting free threes and hitting free throws. You know, it's like I'm looking at James Harden. I was like, dang, you just, what I was doing, you just. just ramped that shit up.
Yeah,
it's kind of like the way I used to play. Like, I was pretty bad at video games, but I've had one play. In Madden 94, I'd pick the Steelers, I'd get Barry Foster, and I'd do halfback toss to the left. It's like there was a glitch in the game where it always worked.
Yes.
And then when it didn't work, just do it again.
And that's the thing, that the players, we recognize that you don't want defense in this game, so we're just going to do whatever we can to score. But, you know, players, but there's always
those
players.
Well, who doesn't want defense?
The league. They want scoring.
You
got to remember.
Similar to football,
flash.
Like you were saying. Yeah. They change the rules so that it benefits receivers and quarterbacks. Mm-hmm. Defenders can't even defend.
More points, more records being broke, it's easy to sell.
More highlights, yeah.
Yeah, that's just the way it is. You know, you can sell something that's scoring 130 compared to something that's scoring 70.
Right.
Yeah, it feels so funny. It feels like you go from being a 10-year-old to an old man when the heyday that you grew up on, I'm talking about myself, were like 88, 86 basketball games.
The idea
that that's what I grew up on is like real ball.
Well, yeah, yeah. It's
You kind of feel like a pariah, social pariah now.
It's just all about skill and scoring.
Yeah.
Now. Just speed the game up and, you know, talent.
Are there players now that you feel like are more reminiscent of an arena-style player? That somebody you would compare to yourself?
Probably, that's what I said, probably Harden.
Yeah.
You know, I knew how to get fouled. You know, I was a one-on-one player.
Uh-huh.
But I look at players like Kyrie, Steph, and I was trying to figure out, can they not last in our era? But I was like, yeah, I'll bust they ass. Because one, they're small guards. See, when I came up,
element.
You know, like AI was a small guard, but, you know, you had, you know, Beattie, who was kind of thick.
Yep.
You had Marbury.
Right.
You had Stevie Francis.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But we were all scoring guards. See, they called us scoring guards then.
Yeah. Yeah.
They're
like it was
an
anomaly.
Yeah, they call them point guards now.
Right,
like,
right, right.
We were ball hogs.
Yeah.
They're pure points.
Because they were coming after the assist, Isaiah, who was also a scorer, but like the guys that were strictly distributors.
Sure, yeah.
And then you added the scoring to
it. And then now they realize the scoring guard is actually more important than the pure point.
Right.
Because if your pure point is doing his job, getting everyone better, that means no one's that good. They're not that good.
Because they're dependent on
Dependent on someone else. Like,
well, I always felt like the reason I've always, Chris Paul has always stood out to me as this incredible, like, old school, but also, like, modern kind of prototype of a modern guard, because he can facilitate and he can create, like, a chess player, and then if he has to or if he wants to, he can score.
But see, the problem with Chris Paul is...
Here it comes.
You're the superstar making everyone better, making Blake better, making these players better. when you take you off the court, they don't know how to eat.
Yeah.
They're like caged animals.
Yeah.
They're so used to you just coming bringing them the food.
Yeah.
When you put them in the wild, you know.
Chris Paul's new nickname is the zookeeper.
Exactly. Matt Damon.
It is?
Yeah. No, that's what we're going to name him. We're going to call him.
They don't know what to do. They don't know how to feast for themselves. Now you look at Blake Griffin, and you're the most dominant jumper.
Right.
You know, in your position, you can consider yourself top seven of all time of just natural athleticism.
Yeah.
But you can't post up yet. You cannot be a force in the post because you never had to. You never learned it.
Yeah.
Because Chris Paul will dribble around and you come running in, he passes you the ball, you know, it's like a track and field, you know, event for you.
Right, mm-hmm.
And now it's like he's not there. Players. Now he's sitting here shooting threes, chucking them, and I'm like, all right, do that.
Yeah.
You're not embarrassing me down low. You can shoot threes all you want.
Sure. Right.
Well, we just talked about one-way players and those enforcers that, you know, if there's a glaring weakness in your game, a glaring absence of something that's a threat, that's a weakness. You're going to let that, go ahead.
Yeah, it's like, I remember watching Tim Duncan. He had five fouls with like 8 minutes left in a playoff game. They kept him in, and he went to overtime. Right. And I'm like, how does that happen, Blake? Y'all should have
post,
force it. Like at some point, he has to make a decision to keep giving you buckets or foul you.
Right.
But because you kept shooting jump shots, he kept playing.
Yeah.
And I was like, what the hell is going on?
That speaks to both sides. Tim Duncan being a genius and that being, they're not ready for that.
You're talking about your style of play and how it mapped to the game today. I feel like between the nicknames and the explosive scoring and just, I mean, you're known for having an outsized personality. I'm curious if you feel like both as a player and as a person, if there are any, like, what do you think is the biggest either misconception, misunderstanding about you, either that lingers as a player or as an individual?
Just like an actor. You have your on-the-screen persona, and then you have your, like, so my agency or who I was in the media is not who I am when I'm away from basketball, and people actually don't understand the concept.
What are the differences?
So, like, I'm outspoken. No chill at all.
Okay.
I'm gonna talk my shit.
It's real life.
No.
On the court. Got it.
Like in that media, whenever I'm in the media. But when I'm at home, you would never see me. I'm not gonna get in trouble for partying, drinking, because I don't leave my house.
Right.
You know, I don't leave my house. So I remember with the big gun thing, and they're like, "Oh, look, he's always getting in trouble." Like, well, technically, that was inside the arena, and they chose to pull that bullshit on me. That's not something I got. I didn't get caught in the street.
Who chose to pull bullshit on? What do you mean?
The team chose to do that.
By leaking the story?
By leaking the story.
If something happens in an arena, just like anything, if something happens, there's always a party who's going to benefit from it or get hurt by it. So if it gets leaked out,
there's a reason. That's considered team business. Yeah. That would otherwise stay in-house.
Yeah, there's fights all the time happens.
Is that the organization, like, punishing you via the media? Like, now we're going to show that your rep is going to be tarnished?
Yeah, I mean, if you ever notice when someone's getting traded or they want to trade someone, it's always he's a bad locker room guy.
Yeah. They're toxic.
Yeah,
he set the tone so that the town, so the city can receive.
Yes. 'Cause
why else would you can't trade?
Yeah, it's the city.
Like
a Jimmy Butler. Like a Jimmy Butler. Uh-huh. Oh, he's bad for the locker room. He's a toxic guy. Yeah. So when you trade him, the season ticket holders don't, you know,
rebel.
They don't boycott.
Can I ask you one thing about that? Because you recently clarified that incident. I have one specific question about the gambling and the gun thing.
I feel like there's like five versions and most people don't really understand.
The big question I have is, it sounds like what you did was hilarious. Like, I mean, I realize, dear listeners, that playing with guns can be very dangerous. I don't want to, but the idea, correct me if I'm wrong, you presented four guns and said, Pick the one you want me to use on you?
That was my argument.
You said
pick me to use it on you or you to use it on me.
You explained it, not me.
It was one of those, like, Chris Paul, you're going to shoot me? All right. Let me see it happen. It was one of those.
He was popping shit like he was going to shoot you, and you're like, really? Go ahead.
That's
which is both flexing and funny.
Yeah.
Like, there's a little humor
in it. That's what I said. It wasn't what it seemed like. Let's just say this.
That startled the shit out of everybody in the room. No?
Maybe I'm wrong. It sounds funny. No. Yeah.
It didn't startle them?
That's what we do. We shoot paintballs in a gun. That's our home. So let's just say this. I didn't get suspended for guns.
What did you get suspended for?
That year. Detrimental to the team.
Right. Just a vague
No,
that
thing. Was my suspension. It was detrimental to the team.
Toxic locker room
because,
presence.
Because I did the pistol, and they said I was mentally unstable. So with that, they can hold me out as long as they
indefinitely,
want.
Indefinitely, yeah.
So if they were suspended me for a gun charge, it would have probably been one game.
Been fixed.
Because I didn't hold a gun. I was never near a gun. I just said they were mine. So you can only actually...
You didn't pick it up. You just opened the case.
No. It was there way before anyone got there.
Sounds like you represented yourself in the case.
No. But that's what I said. But that's why it was this big old smoke. Because you got once a story hits, that's what everyone believes.
And they run with it. Yeah.
So my suspension wasn't a gun charge suspension. It was just detrimental to the team because I was mentally unstable because I was tweeting and talking shit back.
Right.
But the gun itself, it was only going to be one or three games. But that would have been a backwards move for the NBA as big as it was.
Right.
So they just said detriment to the team, 50 games.
50 games.
Yo.
And don't you say shit. No.
Did you know it was going to be 50 games at first, or was you every week were you hoping it would end?
No, when I was looking at all the gun charges, I'm like, okay, someone shot a gun, 7 games.
Wow.
Okay. Loaded gun on a plane, 3 games. Go to 3 games. Okay, I'm good. I'm sitting at 1 or 3 at the most.
Yeah.
But because they wanted me out, 50 games, and don't you say shit, or we're going after your contract.
Do you mean the team wanted you out?
They wanted me to set the table to be able to...
Well, because I just mean, like, it confuses me, that sort of left hand not knowing what the right hand's doing, because on one hand, it's like, we need to teach that guy a lesson, we need to set the standard, but also, like, why are you trying to portray him as a hothead if you want to maybe deal him or something?
Yeah, are they hurting their own value of their commodity if they trade you?
But... Okay, there's two type of values. There's the value of the player that, I'm not valuable to you anymore, but any other team will pick them up for fan base.
Yeah.
But there's another value, young guys. So did you know we got the number one pick also that year? That year. We got the number one pick. We got John Wall.
Uh-huh.
You know, that's the new breed.
Uh-huh.
So you get rid of the old, come in with the new, rebuild, and then get rid of him.
Make room for, like,
and that's just
different player leadership.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
I don't know what the right path to rebuilding is.
There's no right path. It's just business. Whatever makes business sense to that business guy. Mm-hmm. You got to remember, just like anything, there's dominant business guys. So it's like getting a gold mine. So Lakers, the city of L.A., mm-hmm. gold mine. Chicago Bulls, gold mine. New York Knicks, gold mine. Who else? I mean, right now, Golden State, gold mine.
Okay.
Everyone else, you know, a basketball city and, you know, Charlotte.
Yep.
You know, Milwaukee, Minnesota, Detroit, you know, unless your team is good, day to day, you're losing. So mm-hmm. you're just looking at the numbers. What makes sense?
Mm-hmm.
You know, so if I got to pay you $50 million and we have a little bit of success, and let's say you do blow up into a star. Now I'm paying you $100. So now I'm eating into my profit. My profit is, let's say, $30 million each year. And I want you to come on, Jesse, but I got to pay you $100.
Mm-hmm.
Now that's $20 million a year. Now my profit's $10.
Yeah.
But you're not going to put not one more extra butt in that seat because he's selling all the seats.
Right.
Yeah, you're not worth it.
Yeah.
And welcome to the way the New York Knicks are run.
Yeah, exactly. But
the games are already sold out.
But think about it. If money buys championships, how come the Knicks haven't won a championship or Paul Allen, and you're the richest two owners?
You ready to do like the 12-hour podcast?
Yeah,
you can buy anyone you fucking want. Like, especially New York, you can pay anybody you want to come there.
And you think that people talk about that is because the all these organizations are making money off seats and merchandise anyway. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter if we win or not.
Yeah, and that's what people
say. And also, or just bad management. We're not good at this.
But that's why the same teams win every year, and you're in a team is bad every year. There's no, you cannot be a bad organization every year for two decades. That's just fucking impossible.
The Knicks find a way to do it.
But I'm just
saying, like OKC can show up as an expansion team, a flip, and they can go to the championship.
Because it's new owners coming in. See, these new owners,
like with the Warriors.
The new owners are they're actual basketball fans.
Yeah.
So they, you know, so like a Mark Cuban coming in, because he's a big basketball nut. He comes in, he's going to keep twisting until he wins
the wheel
one.
And deal.
So you think of the best model is the owner, like, is the best model an owner like Cuban who's super hands-on, or is it an owner who, like, knows how to delegate?
No, you want a guy who actually knows
basketball.
Basketball.
And
or
cares.
Any
like,
sport.
Really needs to win or else he's not satisfied.
Yeah, it's like
not
you,
the one
like,
that sits back and is like, eh.
Yeah.
Because if it's a business to you, that means you could probably show up once every 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe in the playoffs if your team actually makes it. You don't know none of your staff.
Yeah, maybe you take your band on tour while the season's going to open for the Eagles.
But it's a tax write-off.
Yeah.
It's a tax write-off for some of them.
We were, before we move on, we mentioned Harden and players that are similar to you. I wanted to know your thoughts on, because you said you know how to get fouls.
Mm-hmm.
And you know in the last couple of years, Harden's got a lot of shit for this kind of cradle, this underarm cradle causing contact. And we talked about defensive toughness and people flopping and old era versus new era physical basketball, people crying foul, people creating fouls and playing with the rules. Are you cool with this new style of like offensively creating, going way out of your way to create contact? Or do you feel like, come on, yo? Like,
I mean, there's one rule I taught myself, my high school coach, Coach Levine taught me. When it comes to offense is always going to evolve. It's always going to be in front of defense because defense, for the last 50 years, has never changed this concept. So if I hold the ball over my head, you put a hand up. If I put it down, you know,
you're following.
Yeah, so you know, if I'm below the free throw line, you're pushing me baseline. You know, if I'm in the middle of the court, you have to play me straight up. So if you're taught that, then offensively, it's easy to always be the defense. So what Harden has learned, which just started with Tim Duncan, if I put the ball here and I'm in a post, that means you have to put your hand out. You have to follow the ball.
Yeah.
So now, okay, if that's where you have to
follow,
I've got you on a string. Yeah.
And that's where that came from because it's just a habit. I'm just working the habit that I'm being taught defensively. I'm using it for offense.
Right.
So what Harden is, he knows you have to play him a certain way, and he's just he's just messing with it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's his game. Like, same thing with Lou Williams. They're just guys that's just using the human behavior of how you play defense to keep them going.
Right. So you're with that. That's not, you don't feel like that's some kind of
it's a cheat code.
It's a cheat code.
You know, the only one that bummed me out, well, no, that one drove me crazy forever. Last night, the Rockets, I was watching the Cavs-Warriors game, and Kevin Love did the thing that everybody does and which offensive players should do because it gets rewarded. He pumped fake for the three.
Yeah.
And the guy went by him, and he, like, leaned almost out of bounds to bump into him. Like,
yeah, see, that
like,
one, that one, they, yeah. That one should not be a foul.
They can make a rule, right? Like a similar to a pass interference rule. If the ball was uncatchable, like, can it be something like if you divert from your natural path of shooting or something? Because you're going
contact.
Like this, and then
yeah. See, there's it all depends on the ref.
Yeah,
you know, it all depends on the ref.
Can a ref non-call that?
Yeah.
Really?
Like a ref? Like that's.
They'll let certain contact slide.
I mean, some they call off. You got called offensive for it.
Uh-huh.
You know, some there's no call. Like you're jumping out of your way. You're jumping out of your path to cause that contact because it's one of those things. Who's causing the contact?
Yeah.
You know, they give the offense is allowed to cause the offense because they're the driver.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They can slowly shift that.
You know, it's just like football. You know, the running back. You know. The running back can dip his head all he wants.
Mm-hmm.
Soon as the defense tries, it's a penalty.
Right. Well, I mean, speaking of which, how it adjusts and how you would handle it now, you have any interest in playing in the Big Three? I've heard talk about you maybe.
I've spoken with Cube. I've spoken with Cube, and he said they're going to change all the games to Fridays now. So that might help me because I get my son every weekend or my kids every weekend.
Yeah.
So, but on my weekends, it's the only time he actually gets to play basketball.
Right.
So, you know, when he's on that my weekend, working. I get to take him to his AAU game. So
got
it's
it.
Like,
oh.
I'm not going to, if it stays on that weekend, I'm not going to be able
look
to
look at that. That's a really
weekend.
Good good lesson for dads out there. He's the next generation.
You know, yeah. I can't. I
Agent told him, one.
I'm yeah, not going to miss that. Games and go fuck around in the big three.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
You know, look what I can not do anymore. Right. Like.
Look what I cannot do anymore. Yeah,
that's the name of my new book.
That's great.
For some reason, a really broad, vague question occurred to me. I just feel like you'd be really well suited to answer it. I was going over highlights of yours, which are like a joy to watch, right? I was going through highlights coming into recording today, and I realized that we never really ask players. It always seems obvious. If you're really great, if you make it to the league, you're a star, you're like 20-plus a game, you're on the tip of everybody's tongue. It seems really obvious you're living the dream. This is the dream life. You've gotten what you wanted. I just wanted to ask a really basic question. Was making it to the NBA and being a star of your caliber a really joyous, fulfilling thing, or what you answer?
No. It's just like an actor. You're putting so much time in your craft to be great, and you've done envisioned it over and over and over. Once it happened, it was like,
Bigger in your mind. It's bigger in your mind.
The build up. So when you did get it, it wasn't what you thought it was. So, you know, making it to the NBA was the dream.
Yeah.
So I used to sit outside hours after hours, nights after nights, working on my craft. Got to college. I used to run 5 miles a day before everyone, just taking thousands of shots. When I got drafted, I didn't get drafted where I thought I was going to get drafted. The thought of me making it to the NBA is like, I'm a top 15 player. That's where I'm going to get drafted. Mm-hmm. I got drafted 31. I'm crying. I had to, back then it was like 2001. That's when they used to have the big old chains with the initials on it.
Yeah.
Big super pieces. Yeah. I threw mine out the window. I don't want this shit. This is the stuff. And threw it out the window, went back to grinding.
Wow.
And I said, I'm never going to feel like that again.
And people view that day as success. You got drafted. You know, and
my dad threw a party and everything. Draft party. I had to fuck you. You know?
Wow.
So I just went underground and just worked when I was at Golden State. You know,
well, it paid off, yeah.
Yeah, I went to Golden State. I set the bench the first 40 games. And then the last, 42 games, I just rocket shipped out. Mm-hmm. So they made a rule because it actually affected Golden State. It's called the Gilbert Arenas rule, where because I wasn't under a bird right, which is 4 years, they could match anybody's, contract. The fact that I was a second rounder, I was a free agent, and they couldn't match. So they only had, $42 million to give me.
Mm-hmm.
So everyone just said, I'm just going to go over to 42. So I went to Washington for 65, and they couldn't match it.
Uh-huh.
So they had to put a rule in and say, if this ever happens again,
they have to have a chance to match.
Because he's our own player.
Wow.
And then they started giving second rounders 3-year deals just so that wouldn't happen.
Damn. Yeah. Well, what you said about that kind of, we had the expectation of the destination, you'll reach the mountaintop and you will rejoice.
Mm-hmm.
And once you actually do it, you realize there is no made it. There is no mountaintop. It's a process.
Yes.
I think people talk about that in show business, as you said, like, you made it. Or how does it feel? You don't view it that way. I'm behind. I got all these other steps I have to take. There is no, where's the rest? I don't see the spot where I rest. Like, but for everybody else, they think it's one target.
Because
just on
you
got to
remember, just like anything, most people's goals are just to make it.
Yeah. Yeah.
I want to make it to the NBA. Because I was asked that question. Okay, you made it to the NBA, now what? Now I want to stay here. Well, the only way you stay here is you keep working on it. You're right. Got to go.
It's all a process.
You know what I mean?
It's all process. There is no fixed finish.
There's no... Because what's so funny is I watch actors because... my dad, we moved here from Florida because he wanted to be an aspiring actor. So I used to read the script with him.
Really?
So he actually thought I was going to be an actor.
Because you'd follow in his footsteps.
Yeah, because I'm just following, I'm learning.
How old were you when that happened?
10.
10?
9, 10, yeah.
And he came out just kind of cold. Was he acting in Florida?
Like, no.
I think he did
Miami Vice. I think he did some episodes of Miami Vice.
No way.
Yeah.
And he came out here cold. You didn't know he had no family out here?
We were sleeping in the car at a park.
Wow.
Sherman Oaks Park.
And then what did he end up booking?
And then he ended up getting with I think it was Chuck Norris's bodyguard. And then he started doing some of that stuff with him, then became a bodyguard and did a couple, scenes here and there. But I used to just read scripts and over and over.
Did it ever interest you?
No.
No. Really?
Because the way I watched film, it wasn't like I'm watching it from his standpoint. Like, what's making him great?
Uh-huh.
You know, he's natural. He's not acting. You know, he's making it seem like a natural.
But you didn't feel like I want to do that. I could do that. I'm interested.
It just didn't. Like, whenever I listen to myself, it's just, I sound stupid.
Yeah.
You know, I look at myself, I made the wrong facial
expression. And now you're hosting a show.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, right. So it was one of those things where it's just, and then I just fell in love with basketball.
Yeah, yeah. When you're hyper self-critical, it becomes really hard to be happy with what you see, you know?
But that makes the best, though, because you're always critiquing to get better.
Right. People ask me that, like, we'll talk about a movie or a show. I watched when I first started. Just to see if what I thought I was doing, I was doing.
Mm-hmm.
Was I communicating that to him? Was I listening? Was I respect that thing I thought I was doing? Did it work? And then I became way too critical. It made me so unhappy. I don't watch anything I do.
Yeah.
Because it's just not, it's not helpful.
It isn't. It isn't.
In that sense. I would imagine, though, you got to watch yourself or no?
No.
No?
Really?
No.
You weren't a game film guy?
Because, no, I always used to just sit there and, like, study. I only studied the defense.
Mm. Okay.
Because I want to study what he does. What he does when a guy has the ball in his left hand. Like when people say, "Oh, you scored, you know, 60 on Kobe." Like, how was it?
Mm-hmm.
And I said, "It was preparation."
You figured something out.
See, I knew about Kobe was he was the great, right? He dedicated his perfection,
right.
But like any great, you got flaws. Your flaws to everyone else might not be your flaw. Your flaw towards me was you wasn't as fast as me.
Okay.
You know, so the fact that I'm faster than you and I'm a one-on-one player, I don't have the edge, but I have enough of an edge. If I stay in my element, I can pull it off. You know, and with me being faster and one-on-one and then not backing down from his mental challenges, which he will always do at the beginning, you know, like as soon as the game starts, he'll be like, all right, Smush, I got Gilbert. I'm going to shut him down. You go stick him. You shut him down. And, you know, we're going to go and get out of here.
Yeah.
But that's the little thing. And then as soon as he always said that, like, all right, yeah, forget the first two plays. We're just going to do 1-4 flat until he plays regular defense. And then I'll just isolate him. And then just make it an island show and then just use my speed.
Right.
So with Kobe, he was great at denying, holding you down, you know, being tough.
Without the ball.
Yeah, without the ball. So by me having the ball, I always have my momentum. You know, so with me having my momentum, he always was on the back pedal.
Right.
So is that a situation where you're
studying his game film, you're seeing how he defends, where your first step should be, you're able to pick spots?
So, like, with certain things, like, if I did a crossover, right? I did a crossover. Typically, you know, it's like, oh, I'll come back at him. But I knew because who he was, I don't have that room to try something different. I just got to get my move and go.
Take that step, yeah.
You know, it's just one of those things where you got kids who play with the ball and do it. No, I just got to just...
If you have an advantage, use it and go. Don't dick around.
I got a San Antonio. Just get the job done. I can't, you know, you can't mess around with greatness like that, you know, because they adapt so fast.
Yeah.
And that's what, you know, some people like. People idolize them. The only way I'm going to idolize you is because I'm going to study you.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
So with Kobe, I studied. Like he studied Michael, I studied him.
Mm-hmm.
I studied everyone because I want to know what makes you great. Now, what makes you great, I want to see how I can win just tonight.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I'm not trying to, you know, beat you for your career just tonight
to
get on to the next night.
In that process, you must also pick up little offensive hitches, little tricks, little shortcuts, little cheats that you add to your toolbox.
Yeah, yeah. So with me, is like, because of my background and upbringing with my dad and studying and trying to figure out, you know, with his stuff, with me is, during the season, I used to have a stat guy. So with my stat guy, it wasn't keeping stats of almost a triple-double like everybody else. I did moves. So during the game, if I'm watching or seeing someone do something, I'll point at the time. He'll write the time down so I can go back and look and see what that player did.
Like how many times he crossed over, went left?
No, just a crossover, just a nice move that I just never did. You know, because you know,
most of us,
we don't work out with each other.
Right.
Yeah. I have an attention to detail question for you. I was talking with our friend Nat about this, actually. There was one fact I loved about your attention to detail with training, which is, did you travel with a high altitude tent, or did you change the atmosphere in your home?
Yeah, so
it would be like a high altitude. Do you remember reading about this?
No.
This was my favorite thing.
So whenever we went to Denver, you know, it's like it's in Denver's advantage to everyone else because of the high altitude.
Yeah.
You know, so you know, you're playing there, you're sitting there getting winded. It's like, man, they have like, how does this help in training? And then coming down. So I asked my trainer, when they come to us, are they in better shape?
Right.
He was like, technically, yeah. So I started looking at things, how to mimic this altitude, and found a place that did it.
Uh-huh.
So I had the little chamber.
Yeah.
Because it was like right around when T.O. broke his leg, and they were talking about the Michael Jackson, you're sitting in this little straight. Yeah. And then so I had one of those.
Hyperbaric chamber.
Yeah, so I had one built, you know, in my house.
And you, what'd you do? You slept in it?
I slept in it.
Wow. How often?
Every night.
For how long?
The rest of the season.
Wow, no big deal.
Really?
Yeah.
Did you feel any different?
I didn't have to work out as hard.
You could tell. You felt the effects.
Yeah. Damn. I was like endurance and shape, and I didn't do a lot of running that summer, too.
Wow.
It's amazing. The other thing that I really wanted to talk to you about, which is out of nowhere, but it just came to my mind, is you had the stated goal at one point. I remember an interview back in the day, and it made me so happy. You had the stated goal of wanting to buy every single DVD in existence.
Oh, okay.
Do you remember saying that in an interview?
Yeah, okay. The only reason I said buy,
okay,
because at the time I thought Blockbuster was going to try to sue me.
Oh, right.
So I had
before burning.
Yeah. Okay. So I had this. They called it Kaleidoscape. It's a big Kaleidoscape. It was like a DVD holder. What it does is you put it in. So it was like a movie theater where it loads.
All of them.
It loads the movie for you on a hard drive.
Oh, okay. It burns them all in.
Yeah, them all in. So what I used to do is go to Blockbuster and I'll just, 30 at a time.
Just couldn't say.
30 at a time. Yeah, 30 at a time. Put them in, load them, take them back.
Now you own them.
So are you a big movie buff, or are you obsessive, or both?
A little bit of both.
Yeah.
I mean, a little bit. I mean, I love movies. Like, I'm a Denzel guy. So I just love, like, my New Year's since I was growing up was I always started a movie with Denzel. The finish, so I'm staying up, like, I start the movie, like, at 11.
Uh-huh.
So I always finish the year with Denzel and started the year with Denzel.
Oh, wow.
And
just like,
it was like a Denzel marathon.
That's like a good luck charm, like, sort of
I mean, because I feel that when it came to, like, TV shows, like, that raw TV, like, 80s and 90s was better because they got to say whatever they want.
Yeah.
Now you have to be careful.
Uh-huh.
So there's no more Al Bundys anymore.
Right. Politically correct.
Yeah.
We're at some point gonna have to stop. I don't ever want to, but before we do, there's two things that I want to make sure to get you to weigh in on. One is this new video that came out about Markelle Fultz, and there's a lot of chatter about his shooting form and wanting to, you know, is that part of the hiccup with his start to his rookie season? Is he trying to fix it? And then a video just came out where it looks like there's a really odd hitch in it, and you had just done this really cool video or clip on your show where you kind of broke down Lonzo's unorthodox shooting form. And I really wanted to hear your take on, I don't know, the state of his shot, the state of his career.
I felt sad when I first seen it. I was like, I seen his shot, I was like, wait a minute, whoa. What the fuck are you guys doing with this kid?
Mm-hmm. This thing now or the free throw moment?
This thing now. His shot is now, because he was a shooter in college. Natural, 90-degree shot, you know, above his head.
Like fluid?
Fluid. It was just a natural. There was no hiccup in it.
Uh-huh.
So when you're looking, you hear all the stories, with fluid drains and all this. And like, okay, you know, something's going on, but you're not telling. So when I seen the video of this hitch, you know, this hit shot push, from his from his hip push, I'm like, oh shit. He tore something. He tore labrum, or he tore something in his shoulder, and they can't find it.
But
what's happening is, and I see him lifting weights, like, that medical staff is bad. There's no way.
Well, that team has a history of rolling out prospects who then have to sit out for multiple seasons with injuries.
Sure. But there's no way he should be doing any lifting. He should be getting. So why he's shooting from here, He lost all this motion.
Oh no. Mm-hmm.
So
because it all goes, yeah, it's all low.
So he has to come from here because he probably can't lift his arm anymore.
So you definitely shouldn't be shooting lifting weights. Yeah, you learn that in high school.
Because they're talking about, oh yeah, muscle, like deficiency. Shut up.
Can they be that inept as a medical staff?
Yeah, you can.
Oh, boy.
You can. It's like, you know, there's probably a tear that they can't see, and it's cutting off his range of motion. Mm-hmm. So instead of having that 90 degrees.
Does he talk about it at all? Does he comment on his China's
form? He probably doesn't even know.
Question, right. Do you think Danny Ainge saw something that the Sixers medical staff doesn't? Why do you think he flipped? There's the story that all our friends always talk about is like Ainge went in the room with him. They were going to pick him at number one. Interview's over. No dice. And then there's this talk like, is it a mental thing? Is it a physical thing? And Gilbert's point is it's a physical thing.
It's a physical thing. Like there was a, you guys are, I don't know if you guys are native LA guys.
No.
Mm-mm. But there was a guy, a player here. He was the LeBron of before LeBron.
Okay.
His name is Shea Cotton.
Oh, yeah, I've heard of, yeah.
So, you know, he was the man child, 6'4", 230 in the eighth grade.
Right.
You know, it was like, you know, so they said if he would have came out his ninth grade year, number one pick. It's like, and he messed his shoulder up, his shooting shoulder. He was a great shooter.
Uh-huh.
And they rehabbed it wrong, and he couldn't get the shoulder passes right. He couldn't get it past his own shoulder. So think about it. If you're shooting here and you can't get it here, now you have to try to adjust the.
Yeah.
And that's where Markel, he's trying to adjust to his
shoulder.
What he's
done his whole life.
His shoulder range.
Yeah.
But think about it. If you can't put his arm, now he can't extend for free throws.
No, man, you're blocking the shot. Yeah,
he's actually. It's
crazy separation to be able to get your shot off.
Yeah, it's handicapping his basketball skill.
Gilbert, did you have to deal with, you need to throw anyone under the bus necessarily, but like, were you at any point a victim of less than great medical care with the knee and stuff?
Well, I wouldn't blame it on my medical staff. It was more that I just wanted to be on a court so bad that mm-hmm. I was willing to just, 2 weeks. Oh, yeah, 2 weeks.
Uh-huh.
My leg's falling off. Yeah, I feel great.
Right. You know,
I just wanted to get out there. You know, you don't know. You just see your peers playing.
Yeah.
You're seeing players getting better. You're trying to, at least stay where you were.
Yep.
Drop. It was no room for droppage on me. So it was one of those things where I had 3 surgeries in 14 months. You know, to this day, I can't fully extend my left leg or bend it.
Damn. What was it? What was it in your knee?
I had microfracture, meniscus tear, PCL strain.
Yeah.
And it started with some goofy drive from someone on the other team. That's always the worst. I was just talking about this morning watching the clip.
The freaks.
Well, also when it's like the amazing offensive, like the beautiful offensive talent is sitting there on defense, like waiting to get the board, and someone bumbles in the lane, falls on him.
Yeah. It happened to.
I don't mean to like, you know.
No, it happened to Blake Griffin when Austin Rivers, something happened. He fell. It's plays like that. You just be like.
Freak, yeah. Huh.
Shit.
So there's two things we should cover, basically. One is I wanted to quickly, we were addressing it earlier, but I wanted to quickly just cover maybe, if not all-star predictions, just our preferred all-star squads.
Who are you liking?
Like, I'm curious
right
with your take, because you obviously have this incredible perspective. Who
do you like the new style this year where two players, the top two vote getters, choose their team? Do you like that?
I don't know. I don't know. It could get dicey, but I see why it's being so in the room, and I get the pick because you could hurt some feelings.
Right.
Keeping it are they going to keep it behind closed doors?
They're going to keep it behind closed doors.
We don't get to watch
this draft.
It's funny. Ironically, like, we watched The Decision with LeBron. You know what I mean? But we can't watch this incredible set of decisions, the shit talking of who you're going to pick.
It's one of those things where it's the first year, they don't know how it's going to work, and then you don't want no recruiting. Players recruiting. You got to remember.
That's what Giannis said. Giannis was interviewed. He's like, well, if none of my teammates are on the table, I'll pick LeBron because maybe he'll come here.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's probably recruiting. And it's one of those things where it's kind of confusing because it's like, okay, we know who the top two voters are. Do we still have a starting five that gets in?
Right, and you're going to pick all guards.
But is it the reserves after? Like, how does the voting work? Is it the fans pick the starting five, so that's 10 players.
Right.
And then the coaches picks the rest. And then those two players pick from there. So I'm trying to figure out, is that the style?
It's confusing.
Yeah,
that's the one thing that I do like about it is that it will avoid, because you talked about awkwardness, players being on the same team that don't want to be, like Russ and KD. Because there's no West and East anymore, right?
Yeah.
So, like, Kyrie and LeBron would have to be teammates, and Russ and KD would have to be teammates. That's not going to happen now.
But, but that's what I'm saying. If I'm a player and I'm picked as a starter, you know, by the fans, and I'm a starter, you know, I can possibly not start in an All-Star game.
Yeah.
Because you got to remember, there's 10 starters. So, let's say, you got to remember, if we're all picking five, and let's say LeBron's last pick is Kyrie.
Yep.
But he don't want Kyrie. So he picks a reserve and say, all
right,
I'm going
to. Right.
They got to show this on
I'm
going to
pick Paul George.
Yeah.
The other team gets Kyrie. Now you have five starters plus Kyrie, who was voted a starter, not starting in the All-Star game.
Yeah, so now will it go down? Because it used to, it's always tracked. Were you an All-Star starter or an All-Star bench?
Yeah.
Now, that affects people's Hall of Fame caliber.
Right, like how many times were you a starter in the All-Star game? Yeah, they might now just need to move it to were you an All-Star or not.
Yeah, that's what I said. It's like
that's a good point.
But that's the bad thing. It's just like. Just like with the ball. Like, it was like little details, you know, like, well, Jordan shot in his ball. He broke all his records in his ball. I don't want to get a new ball. Like,
Yeah.
I don't want to get a boot. I want the same ball Michael Jordan then played with, but that's how people are.
Right.
No matter how great the ball was.
Yeah.
Because I think I hit Kobe with the 60 on the ball.
Yeah, so you got to keep that ball.
Yeah, so I loved the ball. It was a shooter's ball.
Sure.
So they were trying to help shooters out. It was a shooter's ball.
Uh-huh.
But it was one of those things where it's like,
I don't want an asterisk. I don't want to hear it.
I don't want to hear it. Yeah, but
bring back the leather.
Right, fine.
So wait, Gilbert, who do
you top five?
I'm curious who you would draft as your all-star squad if you could pick a starting five.
If I can pick a starting five?
Yeah. We don't have to do the whole team.
And I'm LeBron. I'm going LeBron.
Yeah. So you'll be okay. So you are okay from LeBron's perspective. So you want LeBron on your team?
Yeah, of course.
Of course, yeah.
You get LeBron. From LeBron, I go KD, Harden. I do the unicorn.
Oh,
I go with the unicorn.
When you say the unicorn, you mean.
Porzingis.
Oh, because people are calling other players unicorns. You're making me so happy. We're done now.
And then probably Paul George.
Really? I like that.
Because with LeBron, you need in and out, but you need all shooters. So I'm thinking of a team he would pick for his talent.
Right. And by the way, at this point, do you even worry? Because you were even talking about how fluid you were, like a ball, you know, you guys are ball hog scoring guards and these guys are point guards. Is the concern about people filling the five traditional positions even a concern anymore? Like, when you pick the squad, you kind of, like, want a good range of height and abilities, but...
Yeah, but are you even picking centers? Do you care about center?
It depends. Like, as I said, it all depends. Like, because I've watched so much basketball, I know what players get hurt by what type of players.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, because I'm in the East, and I've seen, you know, LeBron from when he came in.
Right.
You know, so it... You know, I can see, like, oh, anytime there's a big man that knows how to post, kind of hurts his game.
Got it.
He's not very good in the half court, so he needs the ball to be, he needs to be in motion already.
Yep.
And then when he's in a half court, the other guard must be a one-on-one player. So that can carry and break down the defense.
The way you pick is so much more elevated. Now that you're talking, I think I just want, especially because you talked about why you could take Kobe, I think I would want just the fastest team. I think I just want, like, you know, Wall and Giannis.
But that's what I'm saying. But you don't want, you know, just like anything.
Can they play together?
Yeah, you don't want players to, like, the reason OKC struggles struggling, it ain't because of Carmelo and Paul George. It's because Russ. See, with Russ, Russ is a super mega talent. But one thing he doesn't realize he's not a game finisher, he's not that one on one. He doesn't have the ability to break people down. He's just like LeBron. He's just one speed, break you down 46 minutes of the game.
Yeah.
But the last 2 minutes when it's crunch time and his court gets small, you not that guy. And what he doesn't realize is you are the man. you're just not the man at this time or the point.
So you should be deferring to Paul George.
Deferring to Paul George and Carmelo because that's what their skill level is good at.
Uh-huh.
See, that's what I respected about LeBron. And anytime people say, he's not Kobe and Jordan. He's not Kobe and Jordan. He's just a different type of great.
Yeah.
See, he was great enough to understand, look, this is my skill level. I'm great at it. You're great at one-on-one, last 5 minutes. That's what you're going to do. I'm not going to lose games trying to prove.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I'm not going to play this swinging dick contest with you. You are the guy at the last 5 minutes. Do your job. Yeah, we're going to ride with you.
Yeah,
we're going to ride with you.
I'll get us there. I'll get us so there's even 5 minutes.
Yeah, and that's what it is.
So
I'm going to get it. So you finish us off. And that's how they played. Even when it was winning championships with Wade, Wade was the last 5 minutes guy. You know, LeBron would do it, but he knows that's not his true skill level.
Yeah.
And that's where his greatness came from. I'm going to give it to the guy who
It didn't tarnish Jordan's reputation that the last shot was taken by Paxton, Armstrong, whoever else in big games.
Yeah, no, because Jordan was a finisher. Kobe was a finisher.
Yeah.
You know, LeBron is not a finisher.
Right.
You know, it's like he's a Derek Jeter. Uh-huh. He's just an all-around
great. Yeah,
he's not the home run hitter.
Uh-huh. That's what he needs.
He needs a home run hitter, you know, to finish those games. And that's what was great about him and Kyrie.
Yeah,
it's interesting you pick Paul George also, by the way, because like I feel like in a way his storyline is getting kind of hidden this year, and it's popped at certain times, but I feel like he's still. It's almost like depending on what he does next year. He will get back to the sort of iconic status that he had pre-injury.
It's when someone wants you gone, you know, like they try to make the ex look greater,
right?
You know, they try to make him look greater, than you are. So by Victor playing well, you're not Paul George, but you're playing well.
Uh-huh.
You know, it devalues who Paul George is, and that's the only thing. And then being in the West, being under Russ, you know, they keep the highlight on Russell,
right?
You know, so it's so he becomes a Klay Thompson.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, and you're like, yeah, you know, we need to get Klay out of here. Wait, Klay had a career year.
Kind of a G,
He had a career year. You're going to trade the guy who had a career year?
And
he doesn't make an all-star game, doesn't make all NBA because you got Kevin Durant now. Yeah. So now we don't need you anymore.
I need to ask a self-indulgent question. I'm so worried about the state of the unicorn just because ever since he had the I'm so tired. We watch these Knicks games and it seems like we watched him face off against the Brow, another strong Knicks game, and it was just devastating. To see Anthony Davis dropping like 40 and just collecting rebounds, about like the stat line was so well rounded, and he seemed unstoppable.
Yeah, remember this is
worried about his endurance? Are you worried
about? No, this is that too. But this is his first year of
being the guy of
greatness.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so working
growing pains.
That's like you're working out to be the man, and then for him it came. You know, now it's like.
But you think he can be the man.
I didn't prepare for this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I didn't prepare, you know. So it's just one of those things where he's, you know, next year he's going to be even better. And it's one of those things.
I need that.
Seeing it as, it's a process. This isn't the final. This isn't the final.
No, this is, he's just tapping into how great he is.
Yeah.
You know, before, you've seen glimpses of him dribbling the ball up the court, shooting shots. And then this year, like, he can carry this team.
Yeah, yeah.
Now it's just build the team around and him.
His
and just
training regimen this offseason is going to be very different.
Yeah.
Now that he's really got a taste.
Should we jump into
a speed round.
Yeah, hit it.
I want to get a speed round. So we do an open run with Gil. All right, so we're going to hit you. First thought that comes to your mind, a lot of these are basketball questions. All right, toughest player ever to guard?
Kobe. Shit, Allen Iverson.
The truth came out, hit you in the face. A current player that you wish you could have played with or would like to play with?
Alonzo Ball.
Alonzo.
Only because he just passes the shit out of the ball.
Right,
like,
right.
Not
yeah.
passes, like nice passing, just he just gives the ball.
He's gonna,
just,
he'll give,
give
it
me
out.
The, give me the goddamn ball.
Craziest player you've ever played with?
Deshaun Stevenson. Oh, he was a nut job. Oh, yeah. He was bona fide nut job.
Wow. Give us an anecdote. What's a good example?
Okay, he used to wear Scooby-Doo slippers.
In the locker room?
No. In public, just in the airport.
As shoes.
As shoes. Scooby-Doo. So he used to wear his sleep outfit out.
Sure.
But it was like Scooby. It was all kids. Scooby-Doo. He had the SpongeBob. What was that? Over blanket your kids are wearing? He had that. That used to be his airport attire.
Uh-huh. Nice. That's a sleeper. That's a secret one. I was going to say, you know, we talked about a little bit of shit talkers. So I want to know, like, the best shit talker, like, most creative, interesting, or aggressive shit talker. And then, like, the best, everybody has a memory of, like, the best piece of shit talk where you're like, oh, something that was jarring on the court. We talked about some people don't like to hear raindrops. People don't want to hear something after a basket.
I mean, the only one that really startled me was Gary Payton, my rookie season. So I looked up to the glove. Yeah, you know, he was the glove. You know, so when you think about the glove, you think defense, right?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Dribbling down, and he got into the defensive stance. Oh, I wasn't even near the guy. But he got in that stance with a little freaking smirk. Yeah. You know that little smirk?
Yeah.
The little Oakland smirk. And it scared me. And I was like, oh, shit, the glove, and passed it.
Amazing.
So on offense, he was just fucking scoring. He had 19 in like 5 minutes.
Uh-huh.
And then I got subbed out. That was the happiest day of my life. Oh,
you were happy to be subbed out.
Subbed out. Oh, give me the fuck. He's killing me. And then they put me back in. And he was like, you lucky I'm not an AI type of nigga. I would have scored 50 on you in the first half. I'm pretty sure you would have.
he just walked up to you and said that?
Yeah.
Wow.
And it was like one of those, but was the moral of that story.
Okay, yeah.
One of my teammates asked me, he said, yo, I've noticed the last, 2 years we've played Miami. Like, you go the hardest against Gary Payton. Why? And then I told him the story. He was like, Yeah, okay, I see.
Redemption. Yeah, okay, how old he is?
He said no matter when he's on the court, every time he sticks to you, you are trying to shoot the ball.
Wow.
You know, I was going 45, 38. I was not letting loose.
Right.
I was fucking putting that old shit.
Did you ever remind him of that?
No.
Amazing. You mentioned one other thing, totally random, but you said as we were starting the show, we were pulled out our laptops for our notes, and you were like, yeah, I don't own a laptop. I don't have an iPad. What is that? What is that? Why is that?
Because all the new technology, you know, the cameras on the phones, I mean, the cameras on the iPads and all that stuff. If I can see in, that means someone can see me.
Tape on the camera guy?
Yeah. So,
okay. It feels a little creepy to you.
I got a lot of hacker friends.
Okay. Okay.
So they hack into a lot of stuff, and it just freaks me the fuck out. Like,
that's not something I expected to come up today. You have a lot of hacker friends.
Right, I got a lot of hacker friends, you know.
Right.
You feel like it's tracing you and knows where you are. Yeah, it just feels
business,
like just with all the whole technology. Like, I change my number probably 50 times a year.
No.
Yeah. Every week?
But I have a great number now. And it's amazing to me.
Oh, just say it on the air.
I just can't change. I just can't change it. Like when you
call Gilbert at 1-2-3-4-5-6-7-8.
Hey, basically.
What I don't want to do is stop, but we have to.
Amazing.
And this is so fantastic. Gilbert,
hey, what
thank
I can
you so
say,
much.
Guest of the year. Right?
Me?
Yeah.
Oh, thank you. Oh, man. It is January.
But it might hold.
It's the second episode.
Very well could hold.
Let's just say I beat out the only one you had this year.
We covered a lot of bases, discovered a lot of new things, man. Really appreciate
this
it. Make
like
sure to listen
to
your show. Shout us out. How can they find your show on Comfort?
Out of Bounds on YouTube, Out of Bounds.
Done. You
know, great name. Out of Bounds.
I know.
Yeah.
Open Run meets Out of Bounds.
Open Run meets Out of Bounds.
There you go. And
Thank you, Gil. No problem. Thanks for having me.
Anytime.
And we out.
For more Open Run, subscribe to the podcast on iTunes or visit openrunshow.com. And if you like being in the loop, follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Open Run.